live in Southern California. I am Jim Rome, broadcasting from the aforementioned O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. We ended hour number two by talking to L.A. Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers. As I mentioned, you can tell he's still got that fire in his gut. He's fired up for the upcoming season. So we'll reset that a little bit later on in hour number three. But I want to set aside some time and make sure I'm very clear about this. This is one of my favorite moments every single year. It is an annual thing. He makes his annual pilgrimage and his triumphant return. He is a jungle legend. He is a jungle icon. He is a very good friend of mine. I'm proud to say that. He is a New York Times bestselling author. The author of, among others, Bringing Down the House, The Accidental Billionaires, and The 37th Parallel, to name just a few. He has a brand new book out. It is summertime, so of course he does. This book is fascinating. It's called Wooly, the true story of the quest to revive one of history's most iconic extinct creatures. This book is out now. Clones, you're going to like this a lot. I'm joined in studio by Ben Mesrick. Ben, it's great to see you. How are you, Ben?
Oh, I'm so psyched to be here. This is my favorite part of my whole book tour, as I was telling you. This is it. This is where it all starts for me.
Yeah, Ben, you always say that, and it seems like a nice thing to say, and it seems like something you might tell somebody else, but
no.
You mean that sincerely, right? What is it about you and the jungle? How has this particular audience resonated with you the way it has
over
the years?
Well, the clones have essentially propped my entire career up from bringing down the house on. Every time I come on here, it sells more books than the rest of my tour combined. When I started writing Wooly, one of my first thoughts is talking about it here with you, Jim, because I know that's when people actually start reading it. So I'm excited. And this time around, the word clones is actually perfect for this story.
Perfect. It's perfect. All right. So we'll get into that, Ben. I appreciate you saying that about the clones. And I know that's sincere and I know that's from the heart. And they love you too. Now, as the title indicates, it is a book about the quest to revive the woolly mammoth. Now, before we get into that, you get pitched a ton of book ideas, but this is one that you chased down.
Yeah.
So how did you first hear about this idea to bring back the woolly mammoth, and how did you get involved?
Yeah, so I've always been obsessed with woolly mammoths. I don't know if I was a strange kid, but I always thought these are really cool animals, and it's hard to believe they actually existed. And then I started hearing about this story. It takes place in Boston, which is where I live, about this lab that was trying to make a woolly mammoth. And it seems so Jurassic Park and so, you know, out of this world that I had to get involved. So it's the first book that I went and hunted down since Bringing Down the House, other than the Jim Rome book, which I haven't succeeded in capturing yet.
I
walked into this lab and I asked if I could stay. So I embedded myself and I watched as they are attempting to create a woolly mammoth. And it's about, you know, so much more than just the mammoth. The science that's going on is going to change all of our lives. The fact that you can bring an extinct species. I mean, the mammoth hasn't been around for thousands of years, and there's going to be a baby mammoth soon in Boston. That same science is going to change everything. And so I got really caught up in it, and that's what I've been doing the last year.
Ben Mesrick joining me in studio. The book is called Wooly. We'll talk about how it's going to change or what it could possibly mean to the rest of the world. But let me start with George Church.
Right.
Who is George Church?
Sure. So the main character is this mad scientist, I guess you might call him. He's the Einstein of our times. He's 6'5". He's got a huge white beard and huge white hair. He looks like, you know, what you might imagine God would look like. He's narcoleptic, dyslexic. He grew up single mother in the swamps of Tampa. He couldn't read. And he became the smartest, essentially one of the top scientists in the world. He founded the Human Genome Project. He is working on curing cancer. He's the leading guy in this genetic revolution where we're not just reading DNA. Now we're writing DNA. And this is huge. So he's actually a guy who he's created life in his laboratory. Everyone said that that's the line we can't cross. He actually has created a bacteria from scratch already. And the woolly mammoth is one of his new projects where he's going to make mammoths.
Okay, so let's talk about that line that you cannot cross. I mean, one of the obvious issues that he had to wrestle with early on was this notion of whether or not it was ethical to bring back the woolly mammoth.
Right.
What was it that made him feel like it was all right to do it?
Well, the reason to make a woolly mammoth isn't just to make an amusement park like Jurassic Park. The crazy part of this story is there's actually a good purpose to the woolly mammoth. And this is where it gets a little crazy. But it turns out that the whole ring of the world, the whole northern part of our world, is this massive tundra of permafrost across all of Russia, across Canada, across, you know, the whole Arctic Circle. And the permafrost is a giant ticking time bomb. It contains within it more carbon dioxide than if we burned all the forests on Earth three times. So all that stuff we're talking about, you know, recycling and not driving cars and all that crazy stuff, it's meaningless compared to if the permafrost melts. Well, it turns out that these conservationist Russian scientists since the 80s have been running this experiment where they roped off a section of the tundra and they repopulated it with Pleistocene-era type animals. So they've got bison, reindeer, Lacutian horses, which are these hairy horses, and they've got this World War II-era tank. They've been driving up and down the ice, knocking down trees, mimicking a mammoth. And what they've shown is that you can actually lower the temperature of the permafrost by 15 degrees for a century by just repopulating it with these animals that used to live there. And
it's so insane.
The goal of the Woolly Mammoth Project is to make a herd of woolly mammoths and release them into the tundra, which is crazy, but it will actually save this part of the world and keep the permafrost from melting.
And then what does that mean ultimately?
Well, it ultimately means that we get another 100 years. It pushes that line back for when, you know, this ticking time bomb might go off. But really, it's this moonshot project. The idea is way crazy, but it's sort of terraforming a big part of our world with mammoths. It's bringing back a creature that we ate. So the reason there's no woolly mammoths is because we ate them out of existence. It wasn't the changing environment that killed them. 12,000 years ago, there were millions of mammoths. We decided they tasted good. We hunted them. One small family of mammoths walked across an ice bridge in the Arctic Circle to an island called Wrangel Island. Then the ice melted. So this family of 500 mammoths at the time lived another 8,000 years. So there were mammoths walking around just 3,000 years ago.
Okay, that was my next point. It has not been that long.
No.
When did they die out?
They were there when we were building pyramids. There were mammoths walking around, and then we got a boat and we went across and we ate them too. So the last mammoth died around 3,000 years ago. And now these mammoths are frozen in the ice. They're coming up out of the ice. Their tusks are worth $250,000 a tusk because this is legal ivory. So even though elephant ivory is illegal, mammoth ivory is perfectly legal.
So the ice melts and there's plenty of them.
Plenty of them. So these same tribes that used to eat the mammoths are now hunting their tusks and are living off their tusks. And it's these guys who are finding the mammoth material and sending it back to labs like George Church's lab so that he can monkey around with the genetics.
Ben Mesrick joining me in studio. The book is called Woolly, The True Story of the Quest to Revive One of History's Most Iconic Extinct Creatures. That book is out right now. I mean, this is absolutely mind-blowing to me. It's insane. So look, what this sounds like to me, Ben, it's your Jurassic Park, all right? So there are obvious parallels to Jurassic Park, but as you've pointed out, that's science fiction.
Right.
That how is cloning dinosaurs from a prehistoric mosquito different from what Church and others are trying to do?
So Jurassic Park is fiction because you don't actually have any dinosaur DNA. There's no such thing. Dinosaur DNA does not exist. We don't actually know because it's so long ago, millions and millions of years ago. Woolly mammoth DNA does exist. It's coming out of the ice. Some of these mammoths are perfectly preserved. In fact, one baby mammoth has been found when they cut it open, something that looked like red blood came out of it. So the mammoths are coming up. We sequence their DNA, and we're not cloning the mammoth. So in Jurassic Park, they were cloning dinosaurs. Cloning is when you take one cell of a creature and you essentially make it reproduce over and over again and you get the same animal. What we're doing is we're taking the DNA out of a woolly mammoth, we're reading it, and then we're writing it with chemicals in a lab and then inserting that DNA into the cells of an Asian elephant's embryo. And then an Asian elephant will give birth to a woolly mammoth.
All right, so for instance, how different are woolly mammoths from Asian elephants that you're talking about that are alive right now?
Well, they're bigger. I mean, they look different. They're bigger. They've got the red fur. They got these huge tusks. They're about 15% to 20% bigger. There's, 15, 20 feet tall. But in genetics terms, they're very similar. They're almost 99% the same. So if you change, a few hundred genes from an Asian elephant, you're actually going to get a woolly mammoth. George Church is attempting to do 23 genes. So, 23 things that code for red hair, big tusks, the ability to hibernate. Woolly mammoths hibernated, which elephants don't do. And to live in the snow is hard. It's cold. So regular elephants would die in the snow. But woolly mammoths, have to be able to live there. So you've got to make those changes.
Ben Mesrick joining me in studio. Let me do this. I want to open up the telephones. If you want to get into this, he'll stay for another segment. 1-800-636-8686. If you want to talk to Ben about this book or any of his others or his movies, go ahead and do it. Now, Ben, another animal that's mentioned in the book is the naked mole rat, which I know the clones will love. A naked mole rat.
Yes. So
is that me or is that you?
I think that's you.
That's pretty embarrassing.
As soon as you said rat, it starts to call. I think the rat situation. So the naked mole rat is this strange little ugly creature. You can look it up. It's one of the ugliest creatures out there.
That is an ugly,
ugly
animal.
Right. The naked mole rat lives 35 years, while regular rats only live 3 years. So in this lab, they're trying to figure out why that is. They've actually found a possible reason in the genetics of a naked mole rat. They moved it to a regular rat, and now they've got regular rats that live as many as 9 years. So they can triple the lifespan of a rat by using what's in a naked mole rat. And so this same process is going to allow our children to live 150 years. George Church believes our kids will live 150.
Can lead to that or will lead
it
to that?
It will lead to that. In the next, our children will live 150 years. Our children's children may not die. This is what gets really wild. Aging is normal.
Run that back. My kids that are now 16 and 12 will live to be 150, and their kids will not die.
May not die.
May not die.
So here's the situation. Aging and dying are not natural. You don't get old because it's a natural progress. You get old the same way you get a disease. It's your cells breaking down as they reproduce. That shouldn't happen. The reason it happens is because in each time they copy themselves, a little mistake is made. The edges of them get deteriorated and they fall apart. But for instance, in the naked mole rat, it doesn't happen like it does. In elephants, for instance, elephants don't get cancer. Elephants are huge. They have tons and tons more cells than us. They should get way more cancer than we do, but they don't. So something in their genetics allows their cells to keep dividing without these unnatural processes happening. Once you figure that out, you just slice that little gene out, you stick it into a human cell, and the human cell now has the ability to reproduce without falling apart. So the reason we're doing the woolly mammoth isn't just to make woolly mammoths. It's to get this science to that next level where we can suddenly live a very long time.
Ben Mesrick joining me in studio. If you want to take part in this conversation, if you've got a question about this conversation, hit us up right now. Hit me on Twitter at Jim Rome or call 1-800-636-8686. I don't know, Ben. I mean, what you're saying makes sense to me, but releasing a herd of woolly mammoths, creatures who have not walked the earth
right.
in thousands of years, to save the world, no less, not to do it just to do it because it sounds like fun, we got nothing better to do, but to do it to save the world. I mean, it seems like a completely insane concept. Is it?
I mean, it's completely insane and it's true. You know, I feel like Jeff Goldblum's going to be in a movie talking about how life finds a way and the woolly mammoths are going to rampage across Russia. But the reality is this is a project to do good things. It's to use this incredible cutting edge science. They're going to make 80,000 woolly mammoths. That's the goal. And the goal is to repopulate an area of the world that now has no animals living in it. And it used to be teeming with life. Everyone talks about we're in the sixth extinction. I don't know if you've heard this term.
Sure.
But supposedly right now, most of our world is going extinct. So many species are dying. Well, actually, we can now bring some of these back. The woolly mammoth is the start of this, but you know, there's this karmic good in this also. We ate the woolly mammoth out of existence. Now we're going to bring him back. If we're going to live in this world that we live in for much longer, we have to find ways to sort of fix the things we keep breaking. And no matter what you believe about the environment, no matter where you sit on the political spectrum, everyone pretty much agrees that getting rid of species is probably a bad thing. It's probably not good that there are no woolly mammoths anymore. And so this is a way to bring them back. And I think it's an outside the box way of solving the environment that, you know, it doesn't make, you don't have to do anything. I don't have to stop, you know, using styrofoam. I don't have to stop driving my car. I just need scientists to go out there and solve these problems. And this is one solution.
Before I open it up to the clones, then the very obvious question, the very obvious follow, is there any concern that bringing back a woolly mammoth is going to have unintended consequences?
Well, there are, of course, many concerns about that. And not that the woolly mammoth is going to rampage in a city, although that would make a great movie. I think people fear a couple things. One is that, you know, you're playing God with something that, you know, the woolly mammoth went extinct. Its time has come. A lot of people say, well, bringing it back is trying to turn back the clock to an era we don't live in anymore. Other people are worried that you're going to endanger the Asian elephant. So the elephants they're using are actually given to them by Ringling Brothers. Ringling Brothers is no longer in existence, so they're giving their elephants to Harvard to use them in the Woolly Mammoth Project. There's a lot of ethical issues, and there's ethical issues in this genetics. I mean, you can create a species. You can also end a species. We could get rid of mosquitoes tomorrow, and a lot of people would think that would be a great idea. You just insert a gene in them that makes them unable to reproduce. And there actually is a project in this same lab they talk about where they're building domed villages in Africa. They're putting domes over villages, and they're releasing special mosquitoes that can't get malaria, can't carry it, but have lots and lots of sex. And so these sex-starved mosquitoes go out there and they take over the mosquito population and malaria goes away, which sounds like a good thing. But the reason you're using these domes is what if something goes wrong?
Right.
You don't want the mosquitoes escaping and ruining the world. So it's definitely ethically, you know, scary. We're on the verge of
scary,
changing
creepy.
Everything.
It's all the above, I think. All right, so Ben Mezrich is in studio. We're going to take a short time out right now. I've got plenty more I can talk to you about, Ben, but the clones, they're loading up the phone lines, and some of them actually have good questions. If you've got a question or a thought or a take for Ben, hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. We'll hit that in a second. Hey, look, we all have times when earning some extra cash would be a nice thing, like maybe in the summertime when you're trying to plan a vacation, maybe any time when you want to get ahead of your bills. It's not an easy thing to do, or at least I would have said that in the past. It is now. You can drive with Uber. Driving with Uber is a totally flexible way for you to earn money. You can turn it on and off just like you can your car. You can earn extra money for all things that matter to you, whether it is that vacation or getting ahead of your bills or something else. And you get to be your own boss. You work when you want to work. You take time off when you want that too. That's why driving with Uber is the ultimate side hustle. You can earn that extra cash when you want it. And you can make everyday pay thanks to Uber's Instant Pay. You can cash out straight from the app right to your bank account up to 5 times a day. Look, we all want things when we want them. Earning extra cash can help you get them. Sign up and drive with Uber today. Go to uber.com/drive now. uber.com/drive now. uber.com/drive now. Certain restrictions do apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Listen, you do this as long as I have, and you can go off the board. I mean, Ben Mezrich. Ben knows sports. We can talk sports, but we're not talking sports today. And I'm not going to do this every single day. I mean, I would not feed you a steady diet of this sort of thing, but Ben and I have been friends for a long, long time, and you clones love him. So this is why we're doing this, and I have to say the reaction, Ben, to this is absolutely amazing. First of all, if they want the book, because the world has changed dramatically, there are different ways to get books. If the clones want to purchase the book and read the book, what's the best way to do it?
I'll say you can buy Wooly at any bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You can read it as an ebook and audiobook. I mean, I love going on your show and then watching Amazon and Barnes & Noble because I actually get calls from Barnes & Noble saying
what's going on?
There's a crazy run on all the Barnes & Nobles nearby and Amazon goes crazy. But you can buy it anywhere bookstores are sold. It's been out for about a week, so it should be in all the stores.
All right, the book is Wooly, and I take pride in that fact, too. I like when you tell those stories and share that with us. And you're great with the clones because the clones hit you up on Twitter and you almost always respond. Let me read a couple of these things, and then we go to the phones. And Randall Jutt tweets, always one of the best interviews of the year, Ben Mezrich with Jim Rome. At Greg Cook tweets, Jim, this Wooly Mammoth talk is blowing my freaking mind. Rallybug tweets, Ben, would have never guessed the new book. Fantastic. Now you need to get down to Nebraska, the Mammoth Museum capital of the world. Daniel Harwell tweets, love listening to Ben when he comes on your show. He is probably the most interesting person you interview. Hashtag, Lef is a naked mole rat. And then you got the clones being clones. Bobby in Green Bay tweets, tell Eddie Lacy he could eat a mammoth and you'll get the whole project funded tomorrow. Ivan in the 909 tweets, wait, you can extend life of a rat? Where do we go? Sign the family. The rat family, of course. And Alex Hernandez tweets, Cromartie is going to get Father's Day gifts forever. And finally, hey, Vance, I don't think I've learned as much in the last 10 years than I have in the last 10 minutes. Phil in Missouri. We're talking about Ben Mezrich's new book, Wooly. It is out right now. Ben, let's get some phone calls in here and see what the clones have to say about this. All right, let's go to Alaska. Brady in Alaska. Brady, you're on with Ben Mezrich.
So
what's up?
Is Brady. Anyhow, Jim, I saw you in Albuquerque on your first tour stop, but I live up here in Alaska now, and I'm wondering if they do release mammoths up in around Nome, Point Hope, Barrow, and all that, what would the impact on the people being up there? I mean, my wife is Alaska Native. We do dig up and find tusks up here and skulls and mammoth teeth. We have several of them at our house, but
Wow.
How would that affect the people that actually do live up there?
Interesting. Yeah. Go ahead and ask that question.
So the goal is to release the mammoths first in a habitat there aren't any people.
First of all, Ben, can I jump in? How great is that to get a call from Alaska?
I mean, it's amazing.
Right on point, saying, how's it going to affect us?
A call from someone who's actually got mammoth tusks
right.
in his house.
Right.
No, you release the mammoths originally in Siberia in an area that there's no people. But then eventually the goal would be across Canada and in Alaska and places like that. You know, the mammoth is not a mean animal. It's not like a dinosaur. The mammoth is much more like an Asian elephant, which is actually a friendly creature. Elephants take care of their children. They even mourn their children. If an elephant baby dies, the mother elephant returns to that spot every year and things like that. So the goal is to not make dangerous creatures. It's to make mammoths that are going to live in their own families in herds. You know, there used to be plenty of mammoths living with people. It wasn't the mammoths killing the people. It was the other way around. Mm.
Ben Mesrick joining us. We go to Tucson this time. Dave in Tucson, you're on with Ben. Dave, how are you?
Good. I'm good. Hi, Jim. Hi, Ben.
Hey there.
This is fascinating. I'm definitely going to go out and get the book as soon as I'm off the phone. Ben, I've got a two-part question.
Sure.
First of all, what is the time frame of this realistically being able to happen?
Right.
And number two, is the gestation period in an Asian elephant, do they have any idea if the gestation period, when they insert this embryo in an Asian elephant, if it's going to be the same or... I don't know how they would even know that.
That's awesome. By the way, I bet that's the first time you've ever got that question on the Rome
Show. I was just going to say, Ben, you know what? Can I just say, I thought that maybe for the clones that the science of this thing might be too much.
Right.
Check it out. I should never underestimate the clones.
No. Good question. First of all, one thing that totally blows my mind is at this moment right now, there are three living prehistoric woolly mammoth genes in a lab in Boston.
Hmm.
Three genes that are alive now in a petri dish that haven't been alive for 12,000 years. The first baby mammoth could come as early as 3 years from today. You're perfectly correct. The one thing keeping it from happening quicker is the gestation period of an elephant is 2 years.
Mm.
They carry their babies for 2 years. So one of the things the lab is working on is a synthetic womb. So you can actually carry a woolly mammoth baby in a lab without having to have it be birthed by the mammoth, by the elephant. If they get to that point, it could happen sooner. But 3 to 5 years is the goal for the first mammoth. Their goal is 80,000 mammoths.
How long will that take?
So the plan is to create a factory where you've got all these synthetic wombs. It's going to look like something out of the Matrix, where you're essentially growing lots of mammoths at the same time. So I would say, you know, 3 to 5 years is when the first one could come to birth. A herd will take probably a half a decade.
Ben Mesrick joins me in studio. His book is called Wooly. It is out right now. We're taking telephone calls. Listen, it's a rare opportunity. Ben usually comes on once, maybe twice a year. If you want to talk to him directly, now is a good time to do it. We'll keep it here in California. Mike in Cali. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
Good. Hey, so I really think it's an interesting idea, but my question is, how do we protect them from being hunted and ultimately to avoid them from becoming extinct again? I mean, I recall the gray rhino.
Right.
They started auctioning off them, you know, as,
right.
you know, part of a hunting wage so that they can knock them out. How are we going to protect woolly mammoth again?
It's right. a great question. You know, as soon as you get a woolly mammoth, there's going to be a bunch of guys with guns hoping to go out and kill it and get it on
their
mantle. But the goal is, you know, when you make one woolly mammoth, you're right. You've taken an extinct species and you've made a super endangered species because you've only got one. You're going to have a protected herd for a while until you get to a point where they're repopulating themselves. They can have babies with each other. I don't think hunting will be an issue in Siberia, and these areas are kind of way out there. I think if it ever got to the point where they were like bison, you would have issues like that. And eventually, you know, I feel like people are much more conscious about things like that. Hunting Asian elephants is not why the Asian elephant is going extinct now. The Asian elephant is really going extinct now because its area is gone. It can't live anywhere anymore. Those jungles don't really exist anymore, and they're dying of diseases. The woolly mammoth will probably be able to live. You know, we're talking about the tundra. It's negative 70 degrees there. I don't think people are going up there hunting very often, and the tribes that are looking for the ivory aren't going to be, you know, hunting the living mammoths.
Let's get another phone call in here quickly before I go to a break. Chris in Detroit. Nice to have you on the show, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm fascinated. Hello to both of you.
Hi.
My question is this. How does the increased activity of the Pleistocene-type animals and potentially woolly mammoths how does that preserve the permafrost? Right. Intuitively, I would think that the increased activity of the ground would heat it, not cool it.
Such a good question.
I better tell
does that
you,
mean?
You're giving me the best questions I've gotten
by the way,
entire book tour.
This is the small. Say that again.
The best questions I've gotten in my entire book tour. These are the questions that scientists
say. Say it again.
Best questions I've gotten on my entire book tour.
From the clones. It is the smartest half hour of radio I think I've ever done.
Right.
Talk about
so
the
this is a great question.
Said.
The reason that woolly mammoths lower the temperature of the permafrost is they do a couple things. First, they knock down trees. So the permafrost used to be covered in this low grass. Trees grew there because there's no more mammoths. The trees actually suck in a lot of heat because they're darker and bigger. When they go down and you've got this low grass, it reflects more sunlight, which lowers the temperature. Secondly, the mammoth digs up the snow while it's rooting for food, which actually allows the cold air to touch the ground beneath and make it cooler. And then they pack down the snow. Snow is a really good insulator, and it actually keeps it cold beneath the snow. So there's three processes going on, but it has mostly to do with the reflection of sunlight. Trees actually bring in heat. Getting rid of trees, you know, everyone said you've got to grow trees. The reality is trees are good, but they also bring in more heat than just low grass does.
Mm. Ben Mesrick joining us. All right, Ben, how do you feel about this? I mean, normally, you know, back in the day, we do one segment, then we did two segments. I mean, I don't know what your time is like today. There's more content here. Do you want to do one more? Or do you
I
need
would
to go?
Love to stay as long as I can.
Okay,
absolutely.
So let's do one more then, and we'll stretch this thing out. Where is the guest that carries one good segment start to end? Very rare is the guest that can do three, and extinct is the guest that can do three segments. All right, so here's what we'll do. It's your last chance. Give us a call right now, 1-800-636-8686. We'll talk more about Woolly. If there's something else you want to talk to Ben about, go ahead and do it. He's on his book tour, and we'll tell you once again how to get that book. It is out right now. Ben Mesrick in studio. One more segment with him when we come back. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Time now for a sports update. Here it is. Rich Ackerman has this one. One bonus segment. I've got Ben Mesrick in studio. Again, his new book is entitled Woolly, the true story of the quest to revive one of history's most iconic extinct creatures. That book is out right now. And I want to say it again, clones. I'm not sure I've ever been more proud of you, clones. A lot of times you go for the low-hanging fruit, the lowest common denominator, but you have stepped your game up. You're making me proud. Even Ben said these are some of the best questions he's gotten on his entire tour. Now, Ben, whenever you come out with a book, there's always a movie to go alongside the book.
Yeah.
Where does the movie stand here?
Yeah, Woolly is being made by 20th Century Fox, and our producer is the guy who did Twilight and Maze Runner, and we have a writer-director who's just finished up the screenplay, and it should be shooting this winter. We want to shoot somewhere snowy and icy, and so we're going to be casting it this fall. It's going to be awesome, so yeah.
All right, so this guy's happy about this. This is a tweet. Jeremy in New York, literally driving in circles around my job right now, listening to at Ben Mesrick on the jungle with at Jim Rome. Finally, intelligent conversation. Aaron Lott, 303, tweets, I just ordered two copies of Woolly, one for me, one for my dad. Can't wait. Hashtag fascinated. All right, a couple of more telephone calls before I turn Ben loose. This is your chance to get through. Let's go to Wisconsin this time. And I love that the calls are coming from all over the country. Brian in Wisconsin. You're on with Ben. Brian, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. I've got a question for you. You say you have the DNA for one woolly mammoth. What happens if you grow two woolly mammoths and they have the same DNA? Are you inbreeding?
No. So what we've got is once you get the DNA out of woolly mammoth, you can sequence it, which means that you can read it. It's made up of a whole list of letters, A, T, C, G. These are the four letters that represent chemicals in your DNA. Once you've got a DNA sequence, you can copy it. And you can write it in a computer, and the computer can actually print it out in chemicals. It's really, really cool. And so once you've got someone's DNA, you can make as many copies as you want. But they're not exactly the same. They're similar. But what we're doing is you're actually only taking certain number of these genes from the whole DNA. So one DNA strand is like 3 billion pairs of letters. Hmm. You're only going to take a few thousand, you know, to make a gene, essentially, and place those genes into an Asian elephant. So the majority of what you're getting is Asian elephant with a few characteristics of a woolly mammoth. So it looks like a woolly mammoth. It's got the hair. It's got the tusks. But it's also a large part elephant. So it can have sex with other elephants and have babies. It's not like brothers and sisters. It's more like Cousins.
Ben Mesrick.
And then Wisconsin Cousins is legal, right? I think. I don't know.
Yeah, don't go down to their level, Ben. All right, so that's Wisconsin. Let's go this time to Houston. Nancy in Houston. Hi, Nancy. How are you?
Yes, fine. I'm your biggest fan, Romy, and of course, Ben.
Oh, thanks.
I wanted to ask Ben, he mentioned our kids and our kids' kids about extending our lives and perhaps not dying, but how will the Earth's resources support this?
Good question.
I mean, it's a great question, and that's one of the big ethical issues is when you extend aging. And, you know, pretty much most scientists agree that we're going to get to this point of 150 years. It really is going to tax a lot of the resources in the world. It's not going to be initially available to everybody, sadly. It's not going to be that kind of thing. It's going to happen a few labs, and then you're going to have to figure out how it's essentially sold or trademarked or how it's going to work. When we get to the point where we're extending lives a long way towards immortality, if you want to use that word, then it does get really scary. I'm not sure the world can live like that. So those are really good questions that we don't have answers to. I mean, what happens when some private lab outside of Boston figures out how to make people live 200 years? What's the next thing that happens? And that's a great book, by the way, in itself. I'm not sure I have the answer to that question.
Okay, speaking of labs outside of Boston, what about that lab inside of Boston?
Yeah.
What's it like when you walk into that lab?
It's like Willy Wonka's factory. You walk in there at 2 in the morning and there's 91 postdocs. These are these super geeky kids who don't make any money. They live in these crappy apartments in Fenway, and they're just doing science all the time. And in one corner, people are working on these transgenic mice that can't carry Lyme disease. They're going to release 100,000 mutated mice on the island of Nantucket to stop Lyme disease. In another corner, they're working on these crazy neural networks. It's like AI made out of biological material. In another place, they're working on synthetic fuel made from bacteria. I mean, it's like it's crazy in there. Mosquitoes are flying around in this little dome, and they burn $16 million a month in this lab. It's like a factory where anything goes. The only word in it is nothing is impossible. And the other slogan from the lab is, you know, it's only science fiction until we take away the fiction.
$16 million per month?
Yeah, that's
how
much
they spend. Who's funding it?
Well, it's getting funded by a lot of different, both government funding, but also private funding. Peter Thiel, the PayPal billionaire, is actually funding the Woolly Mammoth Project because he's obsessed with living forever and reverse aging, and he sees the Woolly Mammoth Project as feeding into that science. The money is also made. They've got companies starting out of that lab. They just started a new company that's making transgenic pigs with livers that humans can use. They've got two baby pigs now who have in them livers that are perfectly compatible with humans. So imagine what that's going to do to the whole transplant world. You're not going to wait for a liver or a kidney anymore. There's going to be a herd of pigs that you can get a human liver out of.
Hmm. Ben Mesrick joining me in studio. Ben, this guy actually has a question that I was going to ask you. And what do you know? Somebody else from Wisconsin. Let's go to Green Bay. Mike in Green Bay. It's good to have you, Mike. You made it in. What's up?
Hey, guys. I apologize if this question was asked before, but have you guys considered using a different species for doing the gestation, such as like Rob or Rex Ryan? I'll hang up now and listen to you.
All right. Actually, on a more serious note, not bad. Not a bad effort. What other species are being... So when I say that this guy's going to ask the question that I was thinking, that was not the question. But what other species are being looked at or worked on?
Right. So they're attempting to de-extinct. One company's trying to make a cave lion, which were these like... They're like saber-toothed tigers kind of, but they're kind of bigger. Another company is working on passenger pigeons. So you used to look up in the sky and the whole sky was red with these passenger pigeons. And then at the turn of the century, around 1900, we realized they were good to eat. So we would put giant nets in the air and catch them and eat them. So we eat pretty much everything that lives. So we ate all the passenger pigeons and there's none left. And so one of the people in the book is trying to make passenger pigeons. There's been talk about, you know, all sorts of extinct creatures. You just can't go as far back as the dinosaur. You can only go a couple hundred thousand years back. But beyond that, you're just guessing at the DNA.
All right, we're running out of time. I've got time for maybe one more call or two calls for Ben Mesrick. Once again, the book is called Woolly. Woolly is out right now. Let's go this time to New York. Put him on hold, and then I'll go there. We got it now. Lance in New York. Lance, you're on with Ben Mesrick. Lance, how are you?
Yeah, my question would be, well, it's not really a question, but think about it. If you extrapolate it out, like the last caller said, if we get to a stage where they're saying we can live forever, well, obviously at some point, wouldn't that spell the beginning of mankind's extinction? And I just find it ironic. We're bringing back the woolly mammoth, and couldn't that actually spell out the beginning of the end of mankind?
It's a great question, you know, and these are big issues. I think if we lived forever, obviously we'd have to have less children. And so that would be a difficult, or we'd have to go to other planets.
How do you fix that, Ben?
I mean, you need more space.
Right.
The thing is, a lot of the world is not inhabited. We're all jammed into cities, but there's a lot of the world that isn't full of people. It's just, you know, the environment isn't very good. So you have to figure out ways to live in different places. But you're absolutely right. Living forever is not something that, you know, is all good. It's good if you, you know, for a while. But after a while, it taxes the world.
Hey, Ben, you and I have talked in the past. Generally, and this is not the end all, I mean, critics will do what critics do.
Right.
Generally, what are reviews like of the book? The books sell like crazy.
Yeah.
The movies do great. Generally, what are reviewers saying about your books,
so
and what are they saying this time?
Yeah, Wooly, this is the best reviews I've gotten in my career. NPR did this phenomenally. NPR is usually very too literary for me. They usually, you know, don't go after me. The New York Times has called me I write for people who don't read. But the NPR loved this book and went crazy. And then USA Today said, move over, Jurassic Park, you're comes the Woolly Mammoth. And so these reviews have been phenomenal. I mean, I think part of it is that this is about making a scientist cool. And you know, most of us, science is hard. I've never looked in a microscope and never seen anything. And I think that the goal of this book is the scientists are the good guys. If we're going to get out of this world alive, if the world is going to get fixed, it's going to be scientists who save us. You know, as much as we fear what they're doing and we don't understand it, those guys in those labs at 2 a.m. are the ones who are going to solve all our problems.
What about Church himself, though? Is he one of those guys that doesn't want to, obviously not, doesn't want to tell you what he's doing in there?
Right. He's not. So the science is dangerous when it's done in secret. One of the companies I talk about in my book is doing just that. There's a South Korean company trying to make the Woolly Mammoth who have secretly bought up all this land in Alberta, Canada, and the residents there are trying to figure out what he's doing, and they think they're building a Jurassic Park there. They're cloning dogs. You can actually get your dog cloned for $100,000. But these secret labs are what's scary because we don't know what they're doing. George Church is open. He wants everyone to know what he's doing. He's going to do the Woolly Mammoth in public so everyone can see how he did it, because it's science and secret is where it gets dangerous. You know, you're making what could be weapons of mass destruction, the idea of knocking out a gene so that it ends a species. That's scary.
Yeah, Ben, I've mentioned things like Bringing Down the House, The Accidental Billionaires, The 37th Parallel. We've talked about all your books on the program. You might say to me that it's like picking a kid. You're not going to tell me who your favorite kid is. What about this project? Where does
Wooly
this rank?
Well,
Wooly
is
a,
I mean, you can tell,
Wooly
is a passion project of mine. I've wanted to be Michael Crichton my whole career. I've wanted my Jurassic Park. And the Woolly Mammoth, you know, the only Woolly Mammoth we've ever seen in a movie pretty much is Ice Age, you know, is Ray Romano in a cartoon. I wanted to do a Woolly Mammoth story that's real, a Jurassic Park that's real, and I found it. And so for me, I think the Woolly story is the most important book I've ever written. And I'm hoping people go out and feel the same way. And, you know, I want to talk to everyone and anyone who wants to talk about Woolly Mammoth. I also think that this is a great book for high school kids to get across the whole idea. The synthetic biology is going to change everything. Our lives are going to be so dramatically different in 10 years. And I'm optimistic about it. We're going to cure diseases. We're going to live longer. We're going to be healthier longer. And we're going to have Woolly Mammoths walking around. I mean, how cool is that?
Where would you like to see them buy this book?
Woolly? Yeah. I want to see Woolly. I mean, I love
everything. Where do the clones get the book? Where would you
Amazon,
like to see them?
Amazon and bookstores, Barnes & Noble's and your local bookstore. I know Woolly is doing really well in the independent bookstores. But obviously, like every other author, I watch Amazon and Barnes & Noble's. But buy it wherever you love to buy books. And if you Kindle, whatever you want. Just, you know, I would love to hear from you as well. I love responding to the clones because they're funny and they're cool, and I'm one of them. So if you buy Woolly and you like it, shoot me a tweet and I'm happy to
tweet it, Ben. All right, Ben, I've got about a minute. What's the rest of your day look like? How long are you in Southern California, and are you going to be out and about? Can they come find you?
Yeah, I'm going to be speaking at the Burbank Public Library tonight at 7. So I think that's going to be a big crowd there. I'm talking about Woolly. I'm doing a bunch of other sort of, you know, local things. I don't actually know where I'm going. I'm going to be in LA for about 2 days, and then I continue on the tour in Boston and New York. But this is the highlight of my book tour every time, Jim. You're the best.
Hey, Ben, you're the best too. I consider you a very good friend, and I'm proud of you. And this project is amazing to me. And listen, you and I have done this a lot. We rarely do an entire hour. That was an hour that was easily done. I'm proud of you, clones. There were some amazing questions. The book is called Woolly, The True Story of the Quest to Revive One of History's Most Iconic Extinct Creatures. The book is out right now. Again, that's a really, really rare thing to spend an entire hour on something that has nothing to do with sports, and I thought the content was incredible. Ben, congrats. Great to have you back. Good luck with it, and thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Ben Mezrich. All right, so if you couldn't get through, and there's a lot of people on hold, sorry about that. We took as many phone calls as we could.
hit Ben up on Twitter. He is awesome about responding to you. So my thanks to Ben. If you joined us late and you missed it, we're definitely going to run that back in part or in whole on our podcast today. Look for the Daily Jungle. My thanks to Ben, Philip Rivers of the LA Chargers, Rex Hoggard, a writer for the Golf Channel, and you clones. I cannot stress it enough. I've always said this. I've got to call you out and check you when need be, but I have to hype you when that's earned as well. And you clones showed out huge. I'm proud of you clones. Well done. That's it. See you tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. I am Jim Rome, and this is CBS Sports Radio.